What do you want to talk about? Welcome to Life Matters with host Kim Alberts. This is the place to be for discussion, expression, and life matters. Now, sit back, relax, and enjoy some straight talk and fun. Here's Kim Alberts.
Good morning. Welcome to an absolutely beautiful day here in Central Illinois. And we are going to be discussing an issue that really is not talked about very much. I think there's really a lot of shame almost surrounding this issue, so you don't hear about it much. And I was absolutely intrigued when I read the story and heard about the whole issue. We are going to be talking with Mary Beth Cachetta, who wrote an article that I read about in the New York Times. And Mary Beth earned a graduate degree from the University of New York. She recently completed a novel, and she's now working on a nonfiction book about being disinherited. And that's how I really found Mary Beth, was reading this article about her experience when she was disinherited from her father's will. And well, first of all, welcome, Mary Beth.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for having me on your show.
This whole story was so intriguing to me. I know that this happens to a lot of people, but it's something that you don't really hear about. And again, I think it's because people are so ashamed that this happened to them. Because, you know, even as adults, we're constantly striving to get our parents' approval. And to be disinherited, I think that almost sounds like the final act of disapproval from our parents.
I agree. It is very, almost psychologically violent. It feels horrible, and I think it's hard for people to recover from, and I think it's something that not a lot of people want to talk about.
I would agree. I think there's absolutely no way that you can discuss this or come back from this, or if you never had any understanding of it, if you didn't know it was going to happen, I think it'd be a complete surprise to you, and it would be so shocking. Why don't you tell us your story?
Okay. I was born in a suburb in western New York to a pretty middle class family. We were Italian American. I have three older brothers. My father was a doctor and my mother ran his business. I went to Vassar College. I graduated there Phi Beta Kappa. I got this graduate degree in women's studies, and things were sort of moving along well. My father and I had some rocky times, as did all of my siblings, and I have rocky times with my father. And I was in my 20s when we sort of hit a rough patch. And then in the years between our rough patch and my father's passing away, we reconciled. I fell in love, and I realized how important family was, and we made kind of great efforts to get back in each other's lives. And in fact, the last time I saw my father, our final words to each other, I didn't know it was going to be our final words, but we said we loved each other. And my father died in April of 2009, and he died of a heart attack. It was very, very unexpected. And my partner and I went to the funeral, and everybody was acting a little weird around us, but we didn't really think that much about it. And then they claimed to have lost, my family sort of claimed to have lost my father's will, which was weird. My father's records are very anally kept, and so but they showed us, you know, the file that said will and that it was missing. And then finally, after many strange conversations, I just got in touch with my father's lawyer and got a copy of the will. And in it, it said that to my daughter, Mary Beth, I leave no bequest for reasons known to her. And that was when I realized that I had been disinherited.
So that was a huge shock and blow for you.
I had no idea it was coming. Maybe I should. Had an idea that it was coming, but most people some people have an inkling, but a lot of people that I've talked to who have been disinherited say they didn't really know what was going to happen because there's not a lot of conversation. I think in our culture, we don't really sit down and talk about what's going to happen to our parents' wealth and what's going to be the future of our family when they die and how things are going to get passed along.
And you're right. We don't talk about that. I think it's almost viewed as morbid to have those discussions and to talk about what possessions we may be interested in or how the assets will be divided. And it's not a discussion that we really ever initiate or begin. But it sounds like maybe it would have been really helpful if that had happened in your family.
I think if we had had a chance to talk about it, my brothers didn't know that this was happening either. It was a shock to my whole family. And I think if we had had a chance to talk about it, at least I would have had a chance to talk to my father about that, you know, aren't we past this? Haven't we worked this out? And what do you need to say to me now while you're alive? You know, maybe you're still mad at me. You know, why are you doing it? Why would you do this? You know, maybe we would have worked it out.
Absolutely. To find out what the issues were and to be able to sit down and talk about them. It may never have changed his mind, but you would have had the peace of mind of knowing what he was upset about and that you had that time with him to discuss issues.
Yeah, it's interesting because we are on the verge right now in this country of one of the largest transferences of wealth. From baby boomers and their parents to the next generation. And it's some crazy number, like $46 billion that will transfer. And I think like this is a great moment to think about this. And I know there are surveys that say, unfortunately, a lot of the data is very much out of date, but there were some surveys in the 70s and 80s and sort of American opinion was that if in the 70s and 80s, you wanted to talk to your parents about what they were going to do with their wealth. You were seen as a gold digger, or it was untasteful, or, you know, you should just make your own money and leave your parents alone. That kind of stuff was very much the attitude at that time. And I would be interested to, I sort of think that the attitude needs to change if it hasn't changed a little bit anyway already.
How would you suggest that somebody start that conversation?
It's a good question, and I think that a really good way to start that conversation is to say to the siblings first, hey, I know we don't want to talk about this. It's hard to think about mom and dad passing, but they've worked so hard to build everything that they have built for us. Why don't we sit down and talk to them and find out what they plan to do, you know, with their goods and their possessions and property? So that we know what the future of the family is going to be like and how we're going to handle all that.
And you said that your siblings had no idea this was coming. So did this change relationships in your family?
Yes. I think one of the saddest things about disinheritance is whatever kind of legacy a person who disinherits a child thinks they're creating, I think the reality is they're creating a very big fracture in the family because now the siblings have to decide, should we let this stand? These were dad's wishes. Should we change this? We don't think this is right. What should we do? And, you know, I think every family is very complicated and sibling relationships are very complicated. And I've heard from people who have sisters and brothers who are like, no way. You know, we are restoring your inheritance. We're not going through with this. I've heard of siblings who are like, you know, sorry, too bad. That's what dad wanted, and that's what mom wanted, and that's what we're going with. But there's a lot of responsibility on the siblings who weren't disinherited, and I don't think people who are disinheriting a child really think about the other members of the family. It puts my mother in a weird position. It's been very strained.
And how is your relationship with your mother now?
I have a close relationship with my mother. That's a really good question. She and I talk several times a week and email, but it's not something that I think she felt like she could fix for me when my father was alive. I wish she had told me about it. I think that that would have helped, but I think she felt like she was in a bind, and my father didn't want her to tell me about it, and I think she felt like she had to do what he said.
Hmm. And you said that you've talked with others. Now, is this something that seems to happen a lot?
Well, there's some data that indicates anywhere from 5% to 12% of the population may someday face disinheritance. I think that's a much higher number than I think I would have thought in our country. I mean, it's national statistics. Some of the data is very out of date, as I've said. But when I wrote the article for the New York Times, the response to it was very intense, and I got very many emails and phone calls and letters from people who had been disinherited, and most of what they said, the sort of similarities of what they said was, one, you know, this really isn't about the money. This is about being excluded from the family and feeling very, very hurt. And two, I haven't seen anyone talk about this. I haven't seen much written about it. And I want to talk about it. So I started a blog at www.disinherited.me. That's .me. And there's a discussion going on there among people who've been disinherited. And I think it's been really good for all of us to know we're not alone, and also to have some people who have ideas, you know, about how to get through it.
I think it sounds great. Part of any problem is the isolation and the feeling like you're the only one, and nobody wants to walk around, you know, openly stating, you know, here I am, I was disinherited. But if you have an outlet like this where you're able to express the way you feel and to be able to share and to eliminate those feelings, I think that's great and it would help really normalize the world for you again.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. And it's also been interesting very lately, and I think this must happen through Googling just disinherited, the word disinherited, but very lately I've received a few emails from people who just, their parents are still alive. They just found out that the will disinherits them, and so they get in contact with me and say, hey, what do I do? And I've been trying to hook up people with, you know, counselors in that state or lawyers in that state, some, you know, family conflict experts, so that they can, you know, the parent is still alive. They could theoretically sit down with the parent and say, hey, you know, this is hurtful to me. Think of my children, you know, and think of the, you know, my siblings, you know, like, why don't we try to work this out and not have this be the case? What is it that hurts you so much about what I've done in my life? Or, you know, what is it that made you do this? And let's talk about it. So I think that's been really hopeful for people.
Yeah, what a great opportunity for healing and renewal and growth for everybody involved. What do you think is kind of the common theme that goes along with being disinherited?
First of all, there are some people who think that there's really nothing wrong with disinheriting a child, that, you know, a parent has a right to do whatever they want with their goods and property and wealth, and that, you know, a child shouldn't expect that. The child's job is to go out in the world and make their own money. So, but I think in terms of who it happens to, I think, there are some basic kind of patterns. In some instances, there are families where parents got divorced and remarried, and some either children in the original family or children in the new blended family get left out of the will.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. Racism. Healing. Oneness of humankind. It is time to join millions of people all over the world who openly talk about racial healing. Some of us are not sure how to tread when discussing race and culture. Until now. Tune in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with host Sharon E. Davis. Engage with experts and notables. Have a question but are not sure how to ask it? Test it out with our show. It's a safe harbor to explore views and situations that we face every day. A Safe Place to Talk About Race airs live every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Step up to the microphone. View the finalists right now on VoiceAmericaKids.tv. America's next great star is waiting to be discovered. Step Up to the Microphone is an exclusive presentation for VoiceAmerica.tv, where you can see and hear America's next top child star. The program is hosted by Voice America's own Cassie Frazier, and new episodes will be available every week exclusively at VoiceAmericaKids.tv. You can say you saw them at the beginning of their superstar career. Tune in to VoiceAmericaKids.tv.
Want the best life has to offer for you, your family, and friends? There are a number of community-based programs and resources available to individuals for low cost or no cost. No need surfing the net or spending hours on the phone. Now there's a radio program devoted to bringing you the information you need. Tune in to Outreach Today with hosts Melissa Jenkins-Simon and Diane Stafford and get the tools to success. Our program promotes the benefits and services of CI Incorporated, providing health and social services over a wide spectrum of resources and agencies. We want to help you. Tune in to Outreach Today, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Life Matters with your host, Kim Alberts. It's time for some participation from you. Call into the show at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Now, back to Life Matters.
Okay, well, welcome back. We're back with Mary Beth Cachetta. If you have any questions, go ahead and call in and we'll take your calls. Mary Beth, how did you cope when this initially happened?
I was very devastated. I turned, of course, to my spouse and my friends and my therapist and started taking yoga. And then I started Googling as much as I could to figure out, who does this happen to? Why did this happen to me? And, of course, what we really know about disinheritance, we know from famous people. You know, wills are public documents, although the stories behind them, of course, are private, generally family stories. But we in this culture, you know, we love our movie stars and we love our famous and rich people. And so that's who we learn about. Marlon Brando, who disinherited a child, Jerry Lewis, actually Warren Buffett, who disinherited a grandchild, Leona Helmsley famously left her wealth to her dog, Eugene O'Neill, of course, Joan Crawford, right? Very famously disinherited
sure.
Crawford. And so I started to read about these people and read their wills and try and figure out what are the sort of patterns, like who gets disinherited. And I came up with a few sort of archetypes, like the punishing parent who punishes the child for being naughty. Paris Hilton is allegedly anyway, was her grandfather apparently wrote her out of the will for her $60 million inheritance. Because she, well, we know she ended up in jail, and I think he didn't like that for the family name. There's the meddling relative who has undue influence, and one example of that may be Tori Spelling, who wrote in her autobiography about finding out after her father, Aaron Spelling, the television mogul, after he died, she received $800,000 from his will, whereas, you know, he had many, many, many millions, and I think she expected much more than that. And some people say that it was her mother who influenced her father to disinherit her. The abusive parent and the obedient child, in the case of Joan Crawford, at least according to the memoir Mommy Dearest, she was disinherited. She and her brother, Christina, and her brother, Christopher, were disinherited and had, of course, her book, Mommy Dearest, really exposed, I think, for the first time, child abuse in a way that our culture took it in. And she was also disinherited. I think some people think that children who are unsavory, like children who are drug abusers, which is supposedly the case for Jerry Lewis's son, who died penniless. He didn't even have enough money to have a house. I think he lived in a homeless shelter. Or gay parents. I mean, gay children also sometimes are disinherited more often than straight kids. And, you know, interesting, sometimes successful children are left out of wills. You wouldn't think about that. But Jane Fonda and her brother were left out of Henry Fonda's will. And the non-actor child, Amy, was the one who was left the money. And, of course, Henry Fonda's wife at the time as well. So I think there are a lot of reasons. And the fact is that in this country, in almost every single state, any parent can disinherit any child for any reason or for no reason at all.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a homeowner who's trying to save on energy bills and go green at the same time? Tune into Energy Saving in the Home, brought to you by 521 Compressor Saver and Home Energy Consultants, with hosts Gary Parr and Dennis Seltzer. They have saved homeowners just like you as much as 65% on energy bills through energy efficiency practices. You'll learn about conservation, products, and services to reduce energy consumption and save you money. Be sure to listen to Energy Saving in the Home, live every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Do the adventures of Indiana Jones leave you curious about this exotic and unusual profession? If so, don't miss Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology with Dr. Joseph Schuldenrein. You'll learn about forensics, ancient civilizations, and human origins. Listen to Dr. Schuldenrein and colleagues discuss their excavations and related archaeological topics, ranging from the unique to the sublime, and yes, even the mundane. Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology, live Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Life Matters with your host, Kim Alberts. It's time for some participation from you. Call into the show at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Now, back to Life Matters.
You know, right before we went to break, Mary Beth, you were discussing and listing off a lot of very famous people who had some very well-known questionable behaviors. And so I'm guessing that after you take a good hard look at some of these behaviors that led to being disinherited, and then you sit back and you try and look at yourself, I'm guessing that this is just going to lead to more questions and maybe more feelings of shame and wonder for you.
I think also other people very much want to ask you, like when you've been disinherited and you talk about it, people really want to know, why were you disinherited? And for me, I sort of have to write a book about it to figure this out. But people want a simple answer. They want to say, oh, you're gay, that's why you were disinherited. Or, oh, you were a writer and you wrote about your family, that's why you were disinherited. Or, oh, you were progressive and your family was very conservative, that's why you were disinherited. Oh, but really, I don't find that there's a single answer. I think it was more complicated than that. And I think that makes people uncomfortable. I think, you know, everybody wants to have a reason, and it's better if the reason is further away from their own situation so they don't have to worry about being disinherited. But as I said, you know, any parent can disinherit any child for any reason or for no reason at all in this country except for in the state of Louisiana. So I think it makes people uncomfortable because, you know, no one wants to think about, you know, could that happen to me? Or maybe people think, could that happen to me? No, that would never happen to me.
So in your research, you found that the state of Louisiana won't allow that.
What Louisiana does that other states don't do is it puts some limitations on the parent's ability to disinherit a child. So if a child in Louisiana is older than 23 years or is in some way incapacitated or disabled, those children cannot be disinherited. In other words, the state would come back and say to the lawyers who are probating the will, okay, you can't disinherit these children. They must get the inheritance that they would have gotten if they weren't going to be disinherited. And that's the only state. And that happens because Louisiana was a French colony. And in most of the rest of the world, this sort of forced heirship, which means a parent wants to disinherit a child, but the state steps in and says, you know what? You can't. We're going to give this child their inheritance no matter what your will says. That is very common in the rest of the world, but not so in America in any way, in all of the other states except for Louisiana.
Now, is there any other legal recourse that someone can take if they've been disinherited and feel like this wasn't just?
It's a really great question. And there are countries in the world, Australia, for instance, some of the Commonwealth countries, where automatically a judicial process can get rolling. If you've been disinherited and you don't think it's fair, there is a judicial system that will hear you out, hear your case, hear both sides, and then a judge will say, you know what, no, you should not have been disinherited, and here's your inheritance. In our country, in most states, you can contest a will. You have a little window of opportunity, not a very long window, but a little window. Usually the window is short enough that you're still kind of reeling from being disinherited, but you can contest a will. But the law says that you have to prove that the will maker was not of sound mind or body, or that somebody had undue influence over the will maker. So if those two situations are not met, then you have no recourse.
So there's really not much someone can do if this happens to them.
Right. In fact, when I was disinherited, I did speak to some lawyers, and basically the lawyers were like, look, we live in a country where basically the testator, which is the will maker, has the freedom to do whatever he or she wants with his or her wealth and money and property. And so, you know, it says right here, your father did not want you to have any of it for reasons that should be known to you. And so you can't, there's nothing you can do. That's it.
Now, is this more of a Western phenomena or Western culture that a will and leaving possessions to living generations?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you can really look at the history of wills, which is very interesting. The Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, of course, they first were decided to take their stuff with them, right? They used to bury all their gold, their water and their food, you know, that was sort of their way of not having to kind of deal with this. So they were going to take all their goods with them to the afterlife, and, you know. And then, of course, what that did was make grave robbing very, very popular in ancient Egypt. And so eventually the Egyptians developed the first will, which was written out in clay. And it said what to do, you know, what the dead person wanted to have done with his or her property. And the Greeks and the Romans also had sort of a verbal tradition. You had to tell seven people, as long as they weren't slaves or women, in ancient Rome. And that sort of became this verbal. And once you said it to these seven people, priests and whatnot, it couldn't be taken back. But that's how your wealth was going to be distributed. But there wasn't really disinheritance in these ancient cultures because the family was very prominent. And it was really about leaving wealth to the next generation, or you know, your living family members, And then the church kind of came along, and the feudalism came along in early Europe. And that started what they call primogeniture, which was a law and custom that said you leave your goods and property to the firstborn male. And what that kept all these lands together, all of the wealth, the titles that you had, if you were a baron or whatever, you know, you had this sort of entitlement if you had land, and it couldn't be broken up. It had to go down to the next generation via the firstborn male. And so when we got to the British colonies coming to America, right, settling, then we have these radical founding fathers, and they have a choice. They have a choice. Are we going to continue this? Or are we going to come up with some sort of more radical way? Or should we abolish inheritance rules altogether? So we were faced with this dilemma. And what many of the founding fathers, of course, came up with was, we're not going to do primogeniture. We're going to allow for inheritance, but we're going to allow for it in an equal, so that it may be distributed equally among one's children. And Thomas Jefferson was a very good proponent of this, and it was about equality, and it should be all children, and it didn't matter what their genders were. And so that's sort of what we sort of went with, basically kind of a Roman law kind of model. And that's what we started with. Now, at the same time, once you give somebody freedom, they have a choice. So all the founding fathers were sort of for this. But at the same time, interestingly, Benjamin Franklin, the first American, and is how he's known in many of the history books, disinherited his son. And Paul Revere disinherited a grandson. So you have sort of idea of, you know, individual freedom, and the individual freedom will allow you to be good to your family. And at the same time, if you have a choice, maybe you're going to disinherit the kid that you are not approving of.
So this has been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Long time, long history.
You're writing a book now. Tell us about the book.
Is my sort of searching for the reason through some of the stuff that I've learned that we've talked about today, and also telling my story, what happened, how and where I came from. And it's been really interesting. I'm also talking to other people who've been disinherited. I'm talking to some lawyers and psychologists and social workers. I'm just trying to sort of get to all of the cultural aspects of disinheritance. And I think the question is, I think what I want to do is kind of expose it for what a cultural tradition that has a long history in our laws, in our legal system, as well as in our traditions and history and culture. And I want to expose it for that and sort of see if it's a custom that we want to continue or not.
And I think the gap between inheritance and non-inheritance is widening because of our economic conditions. I think fewer and fewer families are able to leave anything.
Well, I think you're right. In the middle class, what's really interesting about some of the data that we have is it shows that disinheritance occurs more commonly among the very, very rich and among the very, very poor, which was a surprise to me. Like, I thought, you know, I sort of felt like everybody else. Oh, it's these crazy, eccentric, rich people, you know? But I think, about it, among people who don't have a lot of resources, who live in poverty, even getting a small amount from a parent could really change their life. You know, it could mean buying a house. It could mean, you know, having money to eat. It could mean a lot of things that are very sort of life and death. So it's interesting to me that it is also something that's practiced among very, very poor people as well.
Absolutely. And I think now so many people are struggling day to day that there is less and less resources for people to be able to pass on, which, you know, I know a lot of people say, you know, I'm going to use my inheritance to do, you know, to buy that house or pay for college or pay for these bills. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the inheritance has been spent just trying to keep parents alive.
Yeah, Yes. It's interesting because as we are growing older and taking care of our own parents in nursing homes or in hospitals or in our own home, very interestingly, some of the people who are very in favor of keeping the inheritance law and the right for people to disinheritance are people who work with the elderly, because in some ways, you know, the argument is if you are an older person and you need your kids to take care of you, what you have to leverage is their inheritance. You know, like, come take care of me or you're not going to get your inheritance. And some of the elder care people think that this is a very important, powerful tool for the elderly in our culture. So that's kind of an interesting, you know, sort of turnaround of thinking about disinheritance.
Absolutely. With families living across the country now and so much distance between them, I think that may often be kind of a carrot and stick approach that, you know, and getting some help that may otherwise not have been possible.
And you know what's really interesting? One of the only patterns that I've really been able to unearth in the social research that's been done, and it's a little bit out of date, but is that the only real social pattern concerning who gets disinherited involves parents. It says that parents are more likely to disinherit children who move far away from their hometown and less likely to disinherit children who stick around their hometown. And that makes sense, right?
Oh, absolutely. The family member who stays very involved and interacts with the parents frequently, sure, much less likely to be disinherited versus, you know, the child who has gone off and developed a life completely separate from parents.
And yet, as you pointed out, we live in such a mobile world right now. People move far away. People move away from their hometowns. So it's interesting. It's something I think that warrants looking at.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we talk often about the fact that no one has neighborhoods anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody kind of stays in your neighborhood that you grew up in. Everyone has spread out across the world. And so it would really be interesting to see how much did these children stay in contact with their parents. Sometimes the far away families are much more in contact than the ones who live in town or live very, very close to parents. So, you know, it would be very interesting to study the variables and how parents looked at what went into these decisions that they made.
I agree. I would love for someone to do some studies on this.
How easily or how quickly did you have people stepping forward or joining your blog after, you know, you put it out there?
Well, what happened was I wrote the New York Times article, and then I got about, I would say right away, pretty much about 100 emails from people who had been disinherited, and they were like, here's my story, and maybe you want to, you know, use it in your book. And so I said, you know, let me hold on to your email. Let me get in touch with you when I sort of figure out what I'm doing. So the first thing I really thought of was, well, I should get a blog going and get all these people there together and talking. And so, you know, it happened very shortly after the New York Times article. I mean, they sort of came to me, and then I tried to create a forum.
Okay. All right. We'll be back after a break. We'll spend some more time talking with Mary Beth Cachetta on the whole issue. So we'll be right back after this message.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
We all want to be happy, but consider that conventional thinking is what got us where we are now. The good news is there's so much more to know that can give us a new and higher perspective. Tune in to A New View of Life with host Kathy Kirk as we unlock the conversational gridlock in America by exploring new ideas and new information on every aspect of life which is needed to move us not just forward, but upward. A New View of Life airs live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Life Matters with your host, Kim Alberts. It's time for some participation from you. Call into the show at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Now, back to Life Matters.
And we're back with Mary Beth Cachetta. Mary Beth, have you found that writing the book served, did it help to heal you in any way?
Yes, absolutely. So that's a great question. I got much clearer on who I am, who I was to my family, who I am to my family. And also I think I was able to find a kind of, you know, forgiveness for my father, and understanding that, you know, we really both were trying to do the best that we can in our rocky relationship. And everyone, my family and the lawyer, also says that my father had wanted to change in the last year of his life. He had wanted to, and had talked to them about changing, talked to the lawyer anyway about changing the will. He didn't say what, but I sort of assumed that he, because we had reconciled, and that he would have, if he had gotten to it, would have changed.
And what is the name of the book? What is it going to be called?
The book is going to be called Disinherited, An American Tradition of Betrayal.
Oh, great title.
Thank you.
And when is it going to be out for purchase?
Well, I am still working on it, and then, of course, my agent has to sell it. So I'm hoping that sometime, not during this year, but maybe during the next year, we'll get it moving along the process of being published.
Okay. All right. So we can look for that. How are your family relationships today?
My relationship with my mother is fine. She knows that I need to write this book. She knows that I'm a writer. And I think my brothers are less certain about my writing this book and the work that I'm doing on disinheritance. I think they would rather I not talk so much about it, frankly. but, you know, this is how I deal with things. I'm a writer, I write, you know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why this happened to me. I figure it out by writing. And so I don't feel like I have much of a choice. But I do feel like I have a choice to protect them as much as I can while I'm writing the book, which is my plan, of course.
You've done some other writing. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Let's see. Now, maybe 15 years ago, I published a book of short stories. I just finished writing a novel. And I have essays that I've published in journals and magazines, and of course the article in the New York Times. So, and I work as a medical writer, which is sort of how I make a living. I write medical articles and materials for doctors to read, educational materials for patients. So I'm basically kind of writing all the time.
Now, your book, Lucy on the West Coast,
Yeah. And short stories.
What was the focus of those?
I don't know. Is it any wonder that it was about dysfunctional families?
Okay. When you have free time, what do you read? All right. So you're reading a lot of law information?
Yeah, I'm reading law review articles. I'm reading law books. I'm reading pretty much anything I can get my hands on, wills of dead people. It's very stimulating.
I'm assuming you have to do a lot of research for these medical articles as well.
I do. And I write on many different topics. So I definitely am very adept at researching in the medical literature. And to me, it's not that different from researching in the legal literature. Just the terms are different, but it's pretty similar.
And if I asked you what was in your iPod right now, who are you listening? Who would you be listening to?
Adele and the Beatles. And let's see, who else is on my music here? Lady Gaga. And then sometimes I listen to spiritual music, like gospel music, just to even it all out.
Now, how did this entire experience change you?
I think that it kind of cracked me open in a way that at first I thought was horrible, but later I've come to see as kind of a transformative experience. I have reached out and made connections with people who have been disinherited. We have helped each other. I have spoken to people in all sorts of professions. It's really sort of opened up my world, and in a way, it's been this kind of strange gift. Like, I felt so crushed by it, but in coming back from it, I think I feel sort of more sort of spiritually fit and maybe even a little bit more compassionate.
Do you feel like you have your mom's approval for your life?
It's a good question. Yes, in a lot of ways, yes.
And is that as important to you as maybe it would have been?
You know, in a way, almost, this is a strange thing to say, but I think I have gone through a process of actually feeling like it's a little bit less important to me. I mean, I think I never really had my father's approval. I was the kid. I was the only girl. I was the kid he kind of liked the least. And what I've come to learn is, you know, I survived pretty well without his approval, and even with his very crushing disapproval, I guess you could say. And so I think I've found more that I can stand on my own. And I love my mother very much, but if she didn't approve of me, I think I would still be okay. And you don't always get to learn that lesson, you know?
Absolutely. I think a lot of adults work their entire lives hoping and trying to gain their parents' approval, and when they feel like they don't have it, it is a crushing kind of a feeling for them when they don't get it, or when they just imagine that they've never had it. Well, you've given us a lot of information today and a lot of great things to think about, and I want to thank you for joining us. We will definitely look for your book when it does come out. So thanks very much for joining us.